Welcome to another episode of The Baraza. At The Baraza, we aim to talk about Africa, the African story, and the African experience. I'm your host, Benjamin Walgwe, alongside my co-host, Patrick Wandolo. And it's episode 5. And in studio today, we have a very, very diverse woman. And I'll let her introduce herself. So, go ahead.
Well, thank you, Benjamin, and thank you, Patrick, for having me here.
You're welcome.
To be part of the Baraza this evening. My name is Nyambura Gadulu. I like to think of myself as a multifaceted African woman.
Yeah, Nyambura, sorry, Nyambura. Do you mind, you're not too audible, though. Do you mind?
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. Do you mind speaking up a bit?
No problem. Is that better?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay, cool. Shall I take it again?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. So I'm Nyambura Gadulu, and I like to think of myself as a multifaceted African woman who's trying to break boundaries within my sphere, my little space. And yeah, I'm very honored to be here. Thank you, Benjamin. Thank you, Patrick, for having me this evening.
You're welcome, Nyambura.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Fantastic. So, Nyambura.
Yes.
The reason why I decided to have you on the show, right, is because I think You're one of the most diverse people that I've met, to be very honest.
Okay. Yeah.
And I think you've been in the banking sector, right?
Yes, I've been in corporate banking for a very decent amount of time.
Yeah. What do you do? What do you do in the banking sector, though?
I was a corporate banker. Let me say that.
Yeah.
For almost 19 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So
damn.
Pretty much handling corporate clients, both from a cash management perspective and trade finance and credit, which is literally lending. Along their working capital cycle. So I've done that for quite a bit. But I retired in August 2019.
You're retired?
Yeah, I took an early voluntary early retirement package. So yeah.
Do you mind me asking at what age did you retire?
No, don't go there. Don't go there, please.
No, I'm
dude, no. Like, what?
It's a question.
You know, you're asking a lady about her age.
No. I have not asked her how old she is. I asked how old was she when she retired.
I retired at 40. I'm happy to say, no problem.
Okay.
This is an honest conversation that we're having, right?
100%.
Open and honest and candid, right?
Yeah.
100%. I retired at 40. Patrick, you're gonna have to repeat that because you're dropping.
Sorry. Yes.
You can hear me?
Yeah.
Now we can.
Yes, I was saying, unfortunately, I'm past that landmark, but yeah, I wish I could do that.
Yeah, Patrick.
Yeah.
Nah, we didn't get you, though. Yeah, so Nyambura.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think as Patrick is sorting out his issue, I think, yeah. So you retired at 40, right?
Yes, I did.
Wow. What compelled you to just say, you know what, I'm done?
Wow. I think it was accumulation of many things. I had worked as a corporate banker for several years.
Mm-hmm.
While it was very rewarding and financially stable, mm-hmm. It was very obvious that I was keeping very long hours,
mm-hmm.
and coupled with chronic stress, and mm-hmm. I felt that started to diminish my creativity and passion. So there was that nagging feeling at the back of my mind in terms of what I can do, you know, in terms of how can I be relevant
mm-hmm.
beyond the sphere of corporate banking. So, and that was a feeling that I've been having for a few years prior mm-hmm. to my decision to take a voluntary early retirement package, so to speak. So yeah, so I think what happened was just opportunity meeting Lady Luck, and it presented itself to me and I took it, and thankfully the organization were gracious enough to allow me to take it and bow out, in a sense. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I still
do love finance.
Yeah.
And the whole aspect about that.
Yeah.
So it's something that I am definitely still toying around with, even now that I'm uh-huh. not in a structured corporate banking situation.
Okay.
Yeah.
So like from a consultation perspective, right?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Would you consider the banking sector stressful?
It's quite stressful. It is.
The pressure is crazy.
The pressure is crazy, and I've always been customer facing from the moment I joined the banking sector. So
mm-hmm.
it's about numbers. It's about objectives. And meeting those objectives, and for me, meeting those objectives are about growing the bottom line. So,
mm-hmm.
so you can imagine, it's about the bank's profitability.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, that comes with its due stress, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. And then, okay, so you retired, and then what next?
So actually, before I retired, I had started to pursue a childhood dream, which is flying aircraft. So, yeah, so I found myself in school and I found myself doing flights on the weekends and when I had spare time or when I was on leave. So,
mm-hmm.
and I quite enjoy it. So when I did retire, I sort of threw everything that I have into it. So I'm
mm-hmm.
currently a commercial pilot student.
Wow.
I do have my private pilot license, but I'm working up towards my commercial license. So,
wow.
Yeah. So you can say I'm a full-time student. I'm back to the classroom.
Wow.
In my older age.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Age ain't nothing but a number, eh?
I absolutely. You know what I say? You're never too old.
Yeah.
Never too late.
Yeah.
Never too broken to do whatever it is that you want to do and to pursue your dream.
Ooh.
You just have to give it a shot, and age has nothing to do with it.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy. That's
mm.
crazy.
Mm.
Wow. Okay.
It's a gamble, but it should be some sort of educated gamble, in a sense. But you can't sit down and say I'm middle-aged and because you think you're middle-aged that you can't learn, you know, or you can't expand your horizons. I completely disagree with that notion. And we have to be very careful about those notions.
I totally wish that everybody could actually, like, pay attention to what you're saying, you know. Because
hi guys,
Because it's true. Everything you're saying is true.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's never too late. You can't say yes.
Oh, you can. Because we have connectivity sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. But well, I'm back. Yes. Yes, it's never too late.
Never too late. Never too old. Never too broken.
Yes, exactly. You know, your comments really resonate with me because I come from a place whereby I suffered due to a broken relationship, divorce, and all, and blah blah, and other things. Yeah. But I found the strength to reinvent myself.
Yeah.
And you know, at one point.
Wow.
It's okay, Patrick.
One that I couldn't start over again.
You thought you couldn't.
Yeah, you know, you say, okay, now where are my peers? My peers are really advanced, you know, they're doing great things. But you just have to find strength, you know, you stop comparing yourself to other people, then you actually start seeing your strengths.
Yeah.
And you actually realize that you have talents that you never knew that you had, and you start, you know, reflecting how you grew up and what you liked. And I started again. I feel like I'm like 19 right now. 40 is the new 20. I mean, you know, life is ahead.
Damn straight.
I hear you.
Yeah.
I hear you.
Life begins at 40, yeah. Man.
Yeah, like the proverbial phoenix rising from the ashes.
100%.
Yeah.
Yep. And you know what's interesting, I think, about being in our 40s is that I tend to feel that we've reached a certain place where we have a better idea of who we are and less attached to judgment, external judgment and external validation.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
And so it presents us a great opportunity for us to just do whatever it is we want to do, where we are at, with what we have at that point in time. You know, it's no longer about keeping up with the Joneses. It's about what fulfills you, what makes you alive. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're more grounded. You're more grounded.
A lot more grounded, for sure.
You really know what you want.
Yeah, you've been through the ringer, so yeah.
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 Experience on the potter's wheel.
Wow.
Yeah.
So Nyambura. Mm-hmm. So okay, finance, or rather the banking sector, and then. You're pursuing aviation. What else? Seems like there's more.
There's a lot more.
Yeah, it seems like there's more. I'm like, whoa, okay, we're headed somewhere.
Behind those giggles, a lot of ambition.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, man. You know, humanity is never we're never in danger of being ambitious. You know.
Mm-hmm.
We're just in danger of being complacent, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, word. Like that.
Yeah, but I think I would say probably what underpins everything for me is I'm a pianist, I'm a creative. And
For real?
Wow.
Yeah, I compose piano pieces and I'm self.
You compose?
Oh,
yes.
Snap.
Oh, my. That's great.
Yes.
My wildest dream.
Damn.
But I think it's really... I am self-taught and I played in my high school years.
What do you mean? What do you mean self-taught? Like, you just taught yourself?
I just taught myself how to play. Don't ask me which key I'm playing on. I just play. I play from my... solar plexus or from my heart or from my gut, and I also play by ear.
So you don't know what basically you just listen to the keys.
I listen to the music and I can pick out the piano piece to it, and then I'm curious about it, and so I experiment on my piano. And yeah, sometimes I do sight read. I don't quite like it because I find it too, it boxes me and it structures me in. But if I learn a piece by sight reading, then what I do once I've figured it out, I sort of change it and just throw in a piece of myself, a piece of Nyambura into the piece. So yeah, but I've found that playing the piano helps me unpack a lot of emotions. So it's my way of expressing what I'm going through at any point in time, whether I'm like absolutely sad or depressed, or whether I am like elated. It comes out in my pieces.
Okay, so basically, as a composer, like for example, you would be known. Let's take Mary J. Blige, for example, right? I think for as long as I've known Mary J. Blige, the records that she has sold the most have been when she's going through something.
And she's gone through a lot.
And it comes out 100% through her music. 100%. And when she's just doing her and being her, yeah, it's good, but you know, we don't really feel it though.
But you see, that's the thing about creativity, you know, all the creative process. It has a lot to do with vulnerability. And when so when you can allow yourself to be fully vulnerable and produce or create or bring forth something, then I think everyone around you can feel it, and they can recognize that, and they can identify with it. And those are the things that actually are, it's like the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, you know. That's where the nuggets of gold are. That's my two cents.
And Nyambura, your comments really, you know, it's really weird, because I have a background in banking too, though. I started with retail, then SME, then eventually corporate banking. And then additionally, I love painting, fine art, painting and sculpting.
Patrick.
Yes. It's so interesting.
Man. Dude, you know, I always, yeah, the onion, you know, it keeps on peeling and peeling and peeling.
There you go.
Yes.
Like, what? Dude, you
this
like
painting? This is a panel of completely multifaceted individuals, you know?
You like painting?
I was actually top of my class in Nairobi.
What?
You're a patch boy.
From St. Mary, from Saints to Patch.
okay, Patch. Very interesting.
Secondary
very interesting.
Blend, isn't it?
Very interesting.
Wow, good.
Yeah.
I honestly would have never guessed.
Yeah, yes. You know, we'll discover some stuff as we go along the way.
Again.
Do you have any work out there, Patrick?
Right now, I don't. I haven't done it for a while, unfortunately. You know, through my kind of, I would call it mutation.
Yeah.
And self discovery, when you know, rising from the ashes and you know, reinventing myself. So that it's a continuous process, but I'm getting there because, you know, like you said, art, you get in touch with your emotion. And like when I get onto the canvas, then it's an expression of how I feel, from the colors to whatever message that I'm, if it's abstract or, you know, realism or whatever it is that I want to do. So that's how I pour out my emotion. Similarly, just the same way when you're on the piano, it's an emotional journey, you know, so to speak. So it's, wow, you know,
it's interesting.
Sometimes you surprise yourself.
When you talk about the phoenix and rising from the ashes, I actually have a piece I composed called Ashes to the Sky. So very interesting.
Nyambura, this is really getting weird.
I know, isn't it? What's... I think I have goosebumps right now.
What'd you say, Pat?
Sorry?
She's saying she has goosebumps. Wow, this is interesting, indeed.
What? That's what's up. So now we have Banker.
Times two.
You're talking about YouTube. Man, really bad. Really bad. Are we really doing this?
Let me back up.
Yes.
Man.
I'm quite enjoying this banter.
Wow. So we have Banker, we have Aviation, and we have Composer. So let me do a rewind, okay? What was your background like?
In what sense? How did
like what was your upbringing like? You know, what primary school did you go to?
So I started off at Nairobi Primary School. And then my dad got transferred to the coast, so went into the coast and finished my primary at Loreto Convent, Mombasa. And
my sister's...
then I joined V High School.
The sister school.
Sister school.
They made.
Which one? All right. And you know, Nairobi Primary is the mother of Patch.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Yeah. I mean, this is an interesting blend. I really don't want to say anymore. I'm just listening.
So I went into the Kenya High School, Boma. Finished and joined USIU Africa for my undergrad, and then started working. And in the midst of working, oh, by the way, my first job, I worked for a radio station, an Indian radio station. I was in sales and marketing. Can you imagine this Miro, this Kikuyu selling?
I thought you were going to say you were a presenter in an Indian radio station.
Actually, what's interesting is the mother ident of the radio station then was my voice. Not like I got paid or anything, but it was actually my voice.
Really?
You're doing voiceovers?
Yeah, I'll just call you to the studio to say Spice of Life. Like in many incarnations, and then they picked up and used it, you know.
It's just brilliant, you know.
Yeah, but no, I was in sales and marketing, so yeah, just driving the bottom line of the radio, the Indian radio station. I enjoyed it quite a bit, though.
That's good.
Then I started my master's, my MBA at the University of Nairobi, and. Yeah, it took me forever to finish, but I finally graduated.
Eventually,
yeah. But really, that was strategic. It was just about climbing the corporate ladder, as it were, you know.
So, wow.
And that helped me along the way quite a bit.
I think education should be strategic. Your background is so wonderful. Yes, tell us more.
Yeah, so finished my master's. The most grueling thing that I've ever gone through. I mean, public campus is a different ballgame altogether.
Yes, it is.
It's not
yes,
about
it is.
Head smart. It's also about being street smart, you know?
I know what you mean. I know what you mean.
I know when I was done, I said I'll never go back to school because I needed to climb the corporate ladder. I'll go back because it's my choice and it's what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
I want myself back again into school.
Ah, okay.
Into flying school, you know?
Mm-hmm. Wow, so Nyambura.
Yeah.
So based on this, based on the schools that you've mentioned, you went to pretty good schools though, if I may say that.
Thank you.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, you went to pretty
good. All kudos
pretty...
to my dad, really.
Yeah. So where would you consider yourself? Like, would you consider yourself upper middle? If there's a difference actually between upper middle and middle, or rich, like.
No. What do you mean? What do you mean?
Yeah.
You're asking me to do a self-assessment on my social ranks?
No, we can look at the fee structure and all that.
Benjamin.
Yeah.
Be specific.
I don't think that's a fair question.
Currently,
okay. Let me shoot straight, as Patrick has said.
Yes.
Yeah.
Would you say that you basically from your very early age, mm-hmm. you were already positioned to kind of do well?
What I would say is. I'm a very fortunate person in the sense that my father was able to educate us and educate us well.
Mm-hmm.
But also don't forget there's a lot of hard work that goes into that. Don't get into a national school just because your folks are able to finance it. In a
mm-hmm.
sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
So basically, it's by merit also.
Of course, I do believe in meritocracy in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, your output eventually gets you somewhere, you know, confidence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I'm not one to sort of put myself in any social class.
Mm-hmm.
I am just mm-hmm. who I am. And mm-hmm. I'm comfortable with what I have. I'm grateful mm-hmm. for the little that I have,
mm-hmm.
or the much that I have. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I like the humility.
But you have to, you know. I'm telling a friend of mine that I'm going into aviation. My first job will earn significantly less than what I. Took home before I left, you know, but I'm happy to start with less because it's my heart beats for the sky, you know. Exactly, it's about fulfillment more than
passion.
Yeah, more than financial motivation. But then again, I have to qualify this. Being in the corporate banking world. Accorded me certain things, you know, allowed me to set myself up in life comfortably. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I can't take that away from the 19 years that I hustled through corporate banking.
Yes,
I can't
man, that's some loyalty though, man. 19 years.
Yeah, yeah. And then Benjamin?
Same organization?
No. I went through three different banks in Kenya.
Okay.
Yeah.
But 19 years, three? That's okay, man.
I started working before I finished, before I graduated my undergrad.
Wow.
6 months before, I was already working full time.
Wow.
Yeah. And really, that's just lady luck smiling on my corner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because there are people mm-hmm. who tarmac right after
for years.
So I'm very blessed, I have to say that. I mm-hmm. started working way early.
Mm-hmm. So Nyambura,
yes.
You said that you were fortunate, right?
Yeah.
Now, what would you advise someone in a very different situation? Because we come across, or rather, there's so many people who today, you know, like you can't even sit down and say you're destined for greatness, because accessibility, you know, is also a big thing, right?
It is, yeah.
It's also a very big thing. And take, for example, you have a kid in I don't want to really mention schools, but
yeah.
Let me say public school, okay?
Yeah.
And then you have another kid who's going to private school.
Yeah.
And the accessibility is very different. These two people, at the point of interaction, they are on two different levels.
You're talking about current state of affairs, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I get you.
You know?
I get you.
The accessibility, I mean in terms of even technology, they're way ahead. You have kids in certain schools doing the coding in year 11.
That's true.
You know, so what are the chances that, so for as long as you can, money also plays a big part, right?
It does.
It gives you
it
access.
Does. It does.
It affords you some of life's luxuries or comforts, creatures' comforts. Yes, it does.
Mm-hmm.
It does. I don't know, it's a hard one to say. The thing is we need to stay away from boxing ourselves in the sense that for kids who are growing up in public schools means that they are already fated for a life of complete struggle financially.
No, yes, indeed.
I think we need to stay away from that.
Yep.
Because yes, there is intelligent quotient at play. There's also a lot of emotional quotient at play, you know. And not to say that those who are accorded a life of great schools and luxury and creatures comfort would actually turn out as adults who have the emotional intelligence to deal with the world.
Yep.
I mean, we've all heard of people who are uneducated and have made it well, big financial.
Totally.
You know what I
totally.
Mean? Yeah.
Totally.
So I think to each their own, in a sense. The thing is to be able to recognize within yourself, especially as young adults, that. Every one of us has something within us that can set us apart. You know, and to move forward from the notion of settling, if you know what I mean. I always say the inertia is a physics law. It's a force, right? Your general state of motion is not forward moving. Your body wants to stay where it is. Your mind wants to stay where it is. Your emotion, you know, and you just want to stay put, but you need to get going. You need to actually exert some force to keep you going. And so what I would say for young adults, irrespective of whatever social class or upbringing or schools they've gone to, is that it's great to have an idea, but it's not enough to have a good idea. You have to act on it. It may take brute force in a sense, but the moment you start moving, you keep going. And the, and somehow I think the universe conspires to your favor, even if you don't have the financial resources.
Amen to that.
Somehow there's a conspiracy to your favor, but you have to keep.
Yeah. Can I jump in?
Going. Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead, Pat.
Wow, it's so interesting. And to piggyback on what Nyambura has said, my perspective is, yes, when growing up, definitely economic status and financial has determined the quality of education that one can have access to. But remember, upbringing and ambition, as we are talking about, is not solely driven in school. It's how it's inculcated into you and by your parents. It's the non-school skills that actually drive you. You know, wisdom, vision, drive, respect, discipline, time management.
Thank you.
I like that, Jamba.
Anybody can or cannot have them. You know, it's up to you to develop them.
Yes. Yes. So knowledge, knowledge is not a prerequisite of wisdom.
No, it's not.
Yeah. Yes, and you can be a person who is very knowledgeable, educated, but education is not a prerequisite of wisdom, because if you do not have inherent wisdom to apply the knowledge that you've acquired, then you're an educated fool.
Yeah.
You get? So when you're being brought up and you have access to the best of schools, but you're indisciplined, you don't know how to plan your time, you don't know, you're not respectful, that will reflect in your, when you grow up. So are your parents driving you to be ambitious? As opposed to somebody who will come from the rural, you know, the village, who knows that school is my way out of all this poverty, right? So that kid will be driven more than the one probably in town, who's already, you know, so many other societal pressures to keep up with the Joneses, you know, status is more of an issue in the urban setting than in the rural area. You get? So a kid from the rural village is going to be so driven to achieve greatness, because probably he's the one who's going to elevate his family from poverty. He's their only hope, so he'll be so driven. And that's the difference between a kid who's grown up in the rural areas and probably come into town via rural urban migration, or for whatever reason, or for educational.
They're focused.
Man. Yeah, they're focused because that's all they have.
Yeah.
And there's a lot at stake.
Yeah, you know what they say? Yeah. Necessity is mother of all inventions, in a sense. Yeah. And your environment can steer you or hinder you. It really depends on how you take it as an individual, as a child.
Yeah, and how you're
driven. As an adolescent, you know?
Yeah, and how you're mentored through that. How you're mentored and how you're taught to deal with various situations. Will you be, if you're mentored to look at the cup half full and not half empty, that's the way you're going to grow up. Or to look, you can also be mentored to look at challenges as opportunities to improve. Or if your parents are people who are pessimistic, then you dwell on the problem rather than the solution. So you grow up with kind of that character trait in you, without knowing.
I have something that I'd like to add to that, and maybe challenge that, Patrick.
Yeah.
That mentorship does not necessarily have to come from the parents.
No, yes, exactly.
It comes from the world around you.
Yes.
Even your spouse.
Yes. Anyway. Yes.
Even your peers. It could be. It's about finding someone that you look up to and you want to be like.
Yes.
And that sort of steers you and that keeps you going in a sense.
I concur fully.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, so Benjamin, you see that difference, like you also gave, when you spoke, you were speaking of the difference between a kid or a child that goes through public school and one that goes through private school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The disparities are not only in Africa, but everywhere else, but more so in Africa, because yes, if you go to America, public schools are underfunded.
That's true.
As well as private. If you go to the project, for example, they don't have the best quality teachers.
That's true.
Yeah. The teachers are not motivated. The infrastructure. You know, all these things. And, you know, the story is so long about redlining. I don't know if you've heard about redlining.
Yeah.
So when you come back into, you know, our situation, we know the issues with public schools. They don't have enough resources for books and stuff. Probably a lot of public schools don't have libraries. To avail that situation whereby kids can read widely. But you see, books don't have to go in tandem with mentorship, whether by teachers, whether by an uncle, whoever. Yeah, so I think for that African ambition to be driven, in my view, I may be wrong, we need a holistic upbringing for our children, apart from schools, because private school is private school. What it does, it opens you up a diverse range of other extracurricular activities, or you find teachers who are not overwhelmed by like one teacher teaching 100 kids, like in public school that I see close to my house. You have one teacher teaching 90 kids. So the teacher cannot concentrate on every kid and lift up the ones that are weak. Yeah, and then our education structure isn't also structured in such a way that it will identify and try and uplift the weak students. It kind of throws the baby with the birth water, where if you don't pass, that's it. But now, those are the things that we need to tweak our education. And also to embrace where the world is going in technology.
But here's my thing. Here's my thing, and here's my thoughts about that. That really is embedded in policy, you know?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
It is, and it's the government at play. Are we willing to put in place across the board, you know, for everyone within that republic?
Yes.
A great education system where you don't need private versus public schools, you know, and all the way through into university. Great transport system, you know, just assist a societal system that supports, quote unquote, the loser, you know, the average. You know, so that comes in with policy, and that plays into our politics of the day.
Yeah, because you see, like other societies, it's not a lose-win situation, because every child has a strength. Just because they didn't pass in math or geography, but there's that one subject, there's that one discipline that child is passionate about and good at. Now, if we can develop our education system to tap that talent, that one thing, then everyone will be made useful in our society. But we don't, you know, you didn't pass you probably two subjects, then now you're deemed, you know, not very precious to the Kenyan system. you can't, and if you come from a poor family, then it makes it worse, because you can't pay for private school.
It's the reality at hand, and that's the truth of the matter. It's a reality.
Yeah.
Our current reality.
And it's sad.
You know.
Yeah, it's sad. It's sad because if we have like art school, we have music school for our students. So we started identifying the strengths of our children at an early stage, and they focus on that. So imagine if your child is good at music, and we start focusing from say primary. By the time they're going to business, you have a Mozart in the house.
That's true. And as you're focusing on that, also putting in place policies that protect, you know, the intellectual property of the industry that can allow them to live a dignified life as an artist.
That is a good one.
Yes, intellectual property. In fact,
that is something that people, you know, Patrick, you remember when we talked about plagiarism?
Yes.
When we did plagiarism?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, we touched on that because I think people really need to be taught about intellectual property and even what that means.
Yes. And explained in detail, you know.
Yeah.
It really is about just being an honest citizen. You know, that's what it is. you're just not going to go and, you know, bootleg stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of our talented youth do not know, have they have vast talent, you know, they're bubbling with talent, but they do not have mentorship on how to channel that
in a right way,
whereby they come up with concepts that are eventually stolen by maybe big corporates.
There you go. There's no real protection.
It's porous.
Totally, yes, it's porous. So porous, and a lot of people don't.
It's such a reflection of who we are in society, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but look at the way it is developed in Europe. Say, you can, that's the level that we should reach, because our children, with all their ambition, eventually get frustrated when they can't get a good deal we don't have a prototype development center. Say, by now we should be having a prototype development center.
Mm.
Yeah, run by the government to help these young and ambitious Kenyans develop their ideas and concepts and see it into large-scale production from there, from the prototype stage, you know, and help them how to strike good deals with corporates to produce their products, you know. But, you know, your ambition gets killed, you know, when they're all young, you know, I want to be a doctor, I want to be this. But is our government deliberately looking at the needs of the world right now in terms of careers? Is it dynamic or are we static?
I think everything boils down to leadership and good leadership.
Yes, it does.
And benevolent leadership. You know, that's what it boils down to. But unfortunately, when you have people who have vested interest at the helm, then you can be sure that this will propagate itself over and over and over again.
Yeah. If one has love and vision for his or her country, then it's easy to inculcate these kind of principles and to push proper legislation, because you're passionate about serving the country and seeing the country move from where it is to wherever it is that you want it to go. Just
the question is, what can we do in our own little spaces to affect or influence a change for the better of all?
Yeah.
You see, that's the question.
Mm-hmm. Because we're looking at a space whereby we're talking to people who probably, okay, if you grew up in the rural area, what would you advise? If you grew up in the urban cities, what would you advise a child who's growing up? What are we supposed to do? What is our role? How do we inculcate that ambition even in situations of desperation or poverty? How?
I think our role first and foremost is to set a moral example.
Yes.
By our own action, you know? Because you can tell your child what to do, but they will do what they see you do.
Exactly.
Exactly. And that's something that every one of us can do in our own little corner.
Yes, indeed.
Live a life of integrity and do what's right.
Yeah, because it trickles. It's a trickle-down effect, Benjamin.
Yeah.
If your leader is corrupt, and those are the role models that you look up to and you line up along the street, yourself horse when they are driving through with the Mercedes Benz they bought with your tax, you know, you also ask yourself, you know, the other day this guy was like broke, now he's a billionaire within 6 months.
Social capital, how about
and
that?
Remember, I agree with you, Patrick, because the fish rots from the head.
100%.
The fish rots from the head, and it's not just in government politics, it's across even corporate world, you know.
Yes, it's a culture that we've
and it
developed.
Goes all the way down to the family unit. In fact, I think it's there.
So, Patrick.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Benjamin.
It's like me asking you, what is the cost of social capital, though? Because what would you say?
Can you quantify it, or can you qualify?
It's that. I can't quantify.
Yeah.
I can't quantify. And it's not static, it's dynamic, and it's dependent on the environment one is operating. I can't really quantify.
So when we talk about entrepreneurs and all this stuff, they just figured their stuff out.
They may have
invested socially to...
No. I disagree with you, Benjamin. Here's what I know about social capital.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why Patrick's saying he can't quantify it. It's something you can only qualify.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a set of shared values that allow individuals to work together in a group to effectively achieve a common purpose.
Yeah, it may be positive or negative or a good purpose or you know,
communities banding together to live harmoniously and to uplift themselves as communities. You know what I mean? But when you have individuals, isolated individuals that are driven by greed, I mean, how much is enough? You know,
see, when the fish starts rotting from the top, you know, for a corrupt deal to happen, it involves a lot of people, maybe from right from the bottom. There'll be individuals within that food chain that to sign certain checks or whatever,
benefiting or to look themselves, at the expense of everyone else, right?
Yeah, so you're put in a situation whereby you're told, okay, sign that check, or, you know, because the big man has said so. And if you don't, we'll get someone else to do it. And yes, you'll kind of like disappear, you know. So
you start by sorting out that big man. That is the person you need to sort out.
And then
you're told you keep quiet. We'll give you. Yeah, we'll give you 50K or 50 large, you know, you keep quiet. Look the other way. And then that becomes the culture because these deals are passing through all those processes.
No.
Just
Patrick,
like...
Patrick, I meant, like Jamburu said, you know, start from the head. If you start from the tail will regrow, right?
Yeah, but you see,
in any case, the fish rots from the head. So you really need to root that out. You know?
Once you root out the head,
yes, exactly.
You can fix the rest because then you set precedence, right?
Yeah, that's what actually I was talking about. But I was just trying to show the trickle-down effect, whereby now the person at the bottom of the chain is forced to also be corrupt by the head. It's a whole chain because a deal involves a lot of people. Yeah? Mm-hmm. And you're told, for corrupt cops, so to speak. They say, we've been given a daily target by our boss.
Mm.
You get? So the ones that are picking up the 50 bob or whatever, 100 bob from you along the street is going to feed it to his boss.
Yeah,
are you getting it? So
sadly.
Yes. So it just becomes a chain. Yes, yeah. But to kill that, of course, you have to cut off the head. But yeah. now that's where the quagmire comes in.
Yeah.
Now, when you have leaders without vision or leaders that have been imposed upon the people, then bend the rules to keep themselves in office.
And relevant.
And relevant. So it's about self-preservation. It's not about the greater good. It's not about vision. It's not about passion for the country.
Damn, Pat, that seemed like a closing segment right there. So unfortunately, we are out of time.
Oh.
Okay.
So, Nyambura.
Yeah.
Based on ambition, what would you tell people? You know.
I think my advice to everyone, regardless of where they're at in their lives right now, is just keep on reinventing yourself. Keep your life exciting. Remain curious. Remain like little children with a sense of awe and wonder.
Yeah.
It keeps you young. It keeps you alive. It keeps you fresh.
Mm-hmm.
And believe you, it's just a matter of time before that opportunity meets your preparedness.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of where you are, we all can catch a break.
100%.
Never forget, pay it forward.
100%. Man, thank you. It's been amazing. Pat.
Yep, Benjamin.
Yeah, anything?
All I'd like to say that challenges are part of life. Life is a series of challenges, like I see it. But those challenges, when you perceive them as opportunities to improve, then you will start seeing the cup half full rather than half empty.
Mm.
Work with what you have.
Mm.
And never stop dreaming.
Mm-hmm.
Your dreams should drive your actions, because dreaming without any actions or follow-up are just but dreams.
100%, I agree with you.
Yep.
Wow, what an amazing show. Nyambura.
Yeah.
I'd like to thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate your time. You know, you didn't have to be here, but you chose to be here.
It's really been a pleasure.
It's an honor, Benjamin and Patrick. It's been an honor to be here, and thank you for thinking of me and inviting me to the show.
100%.
Thank you.
Yeah. So
are you up?
To the listeners, thanks for joining us this week on the Baraza. You can catch us. You can catch all our episodes on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, or via RSS, so you will never miss a show. while you're at it. If you found the show interesting and you'd like to appreciate it, you can give us a rating. Or you can tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend. That would help us a lot. Be sure to tune in next week for our next episode. And as usual, I close with, this time, not a quote, but a proverb. Only a fool tests the depth of a river with both feet. Which simply means, don't leap into a situation without first thinking about the consequences. Have a great week. See you next time.